Hello? Oh, there's a dog outside. Just some guy walking his dog. Nuts. People do that. Peeking? Little bit. It is an episode of News with Nick. It's your bi-yearly episode that gets posted to this website. Newswithnick.com is where you can go if you want to get a video version of the show. And I guess after the show, I'm going to try to send a text update. We used to have this text update system where I would send an update if there was a new show posted or whatever. And then the U.S. was like, well, you can't just be spamming people with text. You have to prove who you are and that this is a legitimate service. So I had to fill out this whole form. It's like, please send a screenshot of how people sign up for your service. So I had to literally send screenshots of my website. And I think it went to a person to be like, okay, this is not a spammer or whatever. Except I don't remember getting back like an email that said, okay, you're all good. So we're going to find out after the show if the text update system still works. But anyway, head over to the website, newswithnick.com, see a video version of the show, download old shows, stuff like that. At this point, the cost to run this show is up to about $60 per show. If you're saying that, okay, I do two shows a year, and then I have to pay to keep the site up. That's about what we're at. But anyway, thanks for coming. It's News with Nick. A lot's gone on, right? So this is the website where I talk. I think everyone should just have a website where they talk once every 6 months. That's probably good. Like you don't care about how people are doing more often than once every 6 months. But once every 6 months, check in with them. Oh, man. So last time I was on the show, I think I've only done one show since I started my new job, which is working remote. I had to get a new job because I was like, hey, old job, you want me to get a vaccine? Well, too bad. And then we were live on the show when they said, okay, just kidding, you don't have to get a vaccine. But I was already mad. I was like, okay, well, you told me to get a vaccine, so now I'm mad at you. And I'm going to just quit. I'm just going to quit. And I was like, I can live off Bitcoin, obviously. I can live off Bitcoin. I can live off stocks. Look at the chart. It's only straight up. I'm going to be a millionaire in like 3 days. And then everything's like, actually, just kidding. This isn't worth anything. We were just joking with you. And so I'm like, ooh, well, got to get another job, I guess. So now I have one of those. It's okay. You do jobs, you get money. You put money into stocks, it goes down. It's life. Let's see. So I did my last episode in June. And since then, I've done another whole season of football officiating. And I could probably do like an entire episode on like some of these games, like using the video from YouTube and be like, okay, on this play, I was thinking blah, 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 and we totally messed that up. But technically, if you want to be, I know nobody listens to this show and nobody goes to this site, but technically you're not really supposed to like go on the media and then talk about the games you officiated. Imagine if the NFL officials, the NFL referees did a huge game like the Super Bowl, and then right after they did a podcast. First of all, that would be amazing. Second of all, that's just not how they want you to do things. it's like if a judge, right, was like, okay, Casey Anthony, you're not guilty. I know the judge didn't decide this, but then the judge had like a podcast. Okay, Darnell Brooks, you're really annoying, and I'm going to go on my podcast and talk about that. They should do that. That'd be way better. Cool. So yeah, I survived the season. I mean, barely. Like, here's the thing. If you're a football official, everyone's like biggest exposure to football officials is what they will see on TV. And so if you're a football official on a high school field in rural New Hampshire, you're probably not going to be as good as the NFL and college officials people see on TV, but they still want you to be. They're still yelling at you constantly. And I love getting yelled at. It's like one of my favorite things. So because people are always mad at me no matter what, you know. I'm like holding defund the police signs. People run up to me, yell at me. It's just what I'm used to. So that's okay. But now I'm graduated from my second year of football officiating, and I think I'm technically fully certified. I think I might have to get voted in, and then I'm fully certified. Head on over to my new website, buyinbuddy.com. I always had this idea that if you wanted to do a poker game, but people only had like Venmo, that there should be a calculator that you can punch in all the numbers, and then it can spit out like at the end of the thing, like at the end of the game, like who owes what thing. So instead of working on shows for months at a time, I just programmed for fun. Now, I don't really know how to program. Anyone who knows how to program knows that there's like all these frameworks like React and Laravel and what's another framework? Agile? I don't think that's a thing. Maybe it is. Anyway, point is, I don't know how to do any of that. I only know what JavaScript is and a couple other languages. So I'm just like, well, can I make it work? And then I go program and I keep typing code and then I keep band-aiding the code and I keep patching it and I keep putting stuff all over. Okay, well, I need this button to do this, but then it needs to do this. So I just copy and paste different blocks of JavaScript into the into a very long JavaScript file. And I go, does it work? Okay, it works. So head on over to my website, buyinbuddy.com. You can see a video on how to use the calculator and tell your friends. Because I don't know how long I'm going to pay for that domain name to stay up. But all right, let's get into the news. Oh, I did have one thing on football officiating here. So I'm not sure if anyone's algorithm tells them like, okay, you love football, so you're going to see this. There was this clip that came out of a referee. He took the chains, he took the ball, and he put the ball down on the field, and then he took the chains out onto the field and tried to measure the ball. You're supposed to measure and see if the team made it past what's called the first down marker. If they did, they get to keep the ball. If they didn't make it, the ball goes to the other team. And in the NFL, when it's really close, like they put the ball down, they're like, wow, we can't tell, did he make it past or not? Because I don't know. Like, where the ball is kind of where the official's like, I think it was here when the guy went out of bounds. So we're just going to say it's here. We're just going to say he made it here. It's not, like, super accurate. But anyway, they put the ball down, and then they bring out these orange chains, and they measure, and if the chain goes past the ball, then they didn't make it, right? Because it's like a measuring tape. Oops.
You know, on that far sideline.
So they're going to measure here.
He hit or anything else, but that foot and a half.
So they we have a horrible pull out angle, the chain.
But it looks like it's going to be short. Stretch that baby. There we go. Give it a good pull.
So they pull it out, and then as the chain is about to go down past the ball, the referee grabs it and pulls it forward so that it doesn't go as far as it would have. And then pushes the ball forward to line it up with the chain and says, oh, he made it.
And Vineland's defense. Oh, no.
What?
The announcers are so funny. What? That was weird.
That was a little suspect there.
It looked like it was a half a yard short.
It was, and then it looked like our official there pushed the ball a little bit forward and signaled it. A first down.
Now, this is a great reminder that anytime you're in a big game, you are on TV. So it's hard to think that. Like, when you're on the field, you're really focused on the field and the 22 players on the field, plus your other officials and the chain crew. And no matter how big the game was, I always forgot the crowd. unless they started booing. Then I was like, oh, there is a crowd here. But I always forgot the crowd, and I always forgot the cameras. But you got to remember that you are on camera. So when this official grabs the ball and and adjusts it in the field, it doesn't look good. But in the NFL and college, these chains are like really accurate and they don't usually mess up the measurements. And so they go with that. What happened here was that the ball started this series on the 22-yard line, right? So if you go back, you can actually see that.
Hands that one off and it's on the ground. And it's recovered.
The white team gets the ball on the 22-yard line. That's where they spot it. Which means 10 yards from the 22 would be the end of the chains, right? So when this play in question happened, and the official said, okay, he made it to here, they put the ball on the 12. Well, using your eyeballs, you know that you were on the 22, and then you made it to the 12. It's a first down. So what happened was, for some reason, when they grabbed that chains, that measuring tape, if you will, from the sideline and pulled it out onto the field, something slipped, right? Someone didn't line it up right because it shouldn't have made it past the point. And the referee knew this. Now, he's super sloppy, probably. I mean, don't send this to the official gods and say, Nick is bad-mouthing officials. But it didn't look great that he pulled the chains out to measure, and then when the measurement didn't come in the way he expected, pulled it back and fixed it, right? But you couldn't go to a single football game without some parent going, did you see that play? I saw on Twitter this referee grabbed the chains and readjusted it and pushed the ball forward and cheated for the other team. I was like, he didn't cheat, right? It was a first down. They just should have never measured in the first place. He should have just put it there and gone, oh, you made it. Because in high school, your field markings, even though they may not be perfect, right? Because they're just kind of painted by a guy, are going to be way more accurate than two parents on the sideline holding these orange chains. I've had those chains run over, and then the guys stand up and they go, oh, well, where were we? Where were we? And I have to be like, okay, you were on the 10 and you were on the 20. Just line up again. Just get close, right? They were never right. Those things are way less accurate than the field themselves. So eyeballing the field and where the ball is way better than bringing these chains out that, like, the chains aren't calibrated, right? When was the last time those chains were measured against a 10-yard long yardstick, right? Because you can't hold them against the field because, like I just said, the field is sometimes not exact. So you'd have to take those chains, get a 10-yard yardstick, calibrate them. If any of the links stretched or something like that, fix that, like the chain links. What a mess. Those things are never checked. They're never right. Everything you see on TV is a lie. All right. So, anyone watching the video version of the show can see that my background is different. I've been busy for the last few months. I've moved. So that happened. People move. And I've got a new story. There's a breaking news this weekend from my new city, I guess you could say. Here we go.
You know, three words come to mind about what happened at this intersection earlier today. Horror, chaos, and heartbreak. I'm a parent who has had a child dance in a parade here for 12 years. And to give you an example of the emotion today, I was coming down this sidewalk on my way to this scene with several other WREL reporters who happened to be here. And a mother came up to me. She grabbed my arms with tears in her eyes and screamed, "Where are they? Where are they?" Because she was looking for her child to find out if her child was okay. Just one example of so much emotion here today.
The Rally Christmas Parade was canceled Saturday morning after a tragic turn of events led to an 11-year-old girl's death. Around 10:15 a.m., the parade was paused as police and medical personnel responded to the intersection of Hillsborough Street and Boylan Ave. An out-of-control pickup truck pulling a parade float hit a girl performing the CNC, performing with the CNC and Dance Company Complex, a group that has performed in the parade in the past. Okay, that's nice to know. The girl was taken to the hospital where she was declared dead. Her name was not released. Other girls of the dance company could be seen crying, being hugged by family. Well, I hope so. We saw other girls, and they seemed completely fine. Their friend had just been run over by a truck, and they were like, okay, well, let's just keep dancing. So there's video here, but the audio is a little messed up. It's just this white truck is rolling slowly down the street, honking its horn with a parade float behind it. So you're saying, oh no, the truck, it lost control. The Raleigh Police Department said that 20-year-old Landon Christopher Glass was arrested and charged with misdemeanor death by motor vehicle, careless and reckless, improper equipment, unsafe movement, and carrying a firearm in a parade. Random. A family member told WRAL News that Glass will not be making a statement. Glass was released on bond and carries a first court date of January 26th. Posts on his Instagram profile show him participating in dance competitions representing CNC and Company Dance Complex in 2018. It is not known in what capacity he is affiliated with the company as of 2022. See if there's another video here.
Today.
No, it's the same video.
1 minute, spectators were happily watching the annual Raleigh Christmas Parade.
And it was such a happy event, and then it just wasn't all of a sudden.
It was chaos.
All of a sudden, you know, we looked up and we saw a truck kind of go to the other side of the road, kind of coming towards us.
Kind of veering?
Veering towards us. You know, people screaming.
Witnesses say the driver of the white pickup truck pulling the CC and Company dance float was yelling that he had lost his brakes and could not stop. The truck careened into the dancers. Adults hustled them out of the road.
They were able to get most of the girls out of the way. And unfortunately, Yikes. We saw one of the girls get run over.
Worth Creech and his 12-year-old son ran with other bystanders to try and stop the truck. Then Creech ran back to the victim.
You know, she was just laying there, and there were people trying to
help. It's going
to
be too sad. It's too sad. Let's see. The driver of Saturday's Raleigh Christmas Parade had multiple tickets for vehicle violations. So there, it's getting a little iffy. Like, at first you're like, oh no, what a tragedy. He just wanted to be like a guy helping the parade, and now his truck got messed up by accident. Virginia court records show that 20-year-old Landon Christopher Glass had multiple non-moving violation tickets on his record, including 4 tickets for failure to have a vehicle inspected, with the most recent being on October 30th. Other tickets included improper exhaust systems and no marker lights. The online records do not specify what vehicle Glass received these tickets for. So I don't know anything about trucks or pulling things, but is it possible that he modified his truck in such a way that, like, and then thought it was an awesome truck that can pull a parade float full of people, but actually when they get on a slight downhill, the parade float just pushes the truck and the brakes can't handle it? Is that possible? We're going to find out. His court date is coming up, January 26, 2023. But not good, not good. A white teacher in Texas has been fired after telling students that his race is the superior one. Last Friday on November 11th, Pluggersville ISD officials were made aware of an inappropriate conversation a teacher at Bowles Middle School had with students during an advisory class. So they're just hanging out, talking to the teacher. There is a video that we're going to play shortly. And the teacher's like, I think that everyone's racist. In the video, the teacher can be seen saying to his multiracial class, deep down in my heart, I'm ethnocentric, which means I think my race is the superior one. Is that really what ethnocentric means? I'm going to look it up. Evaluating other people's and cultures according to the standards of one's own culture. What does it mean to be ethnocentric? Having or based on the idea that your own group or culture is better or more important than other. Okay. All right. So let's check out the video here.
Deep down in my heart, I'm ethnocentric, which means I think my race is the superior one.
He says that so calmly. Like, do you not watch the news, sir? Maybe just other areas. We've talked about this before. It's like, Oh, yeah. We chased like 5 people out of this town with a shotgun last week. That's just the thing we do. Do you not watch CNN? You can't say that.
So, white is better than all.
No, let me finish.
Let me finish. Let me finish.
Everybody thinks that, they're just not honest about it.
Hey, I'm not racist, though. I like all types of kinds.
Did I say I don't like people?
People only think that.
Wait, so you said you are what? You are racist?
You're saying you're, like, you're
I
racist?
I think everybody's a racist at that level.
No, you said you are racist.
I did. Yeah, I'm trying to be honest.
Yes, I'm racist.
No, I'm not saying it again. I've said it enough.
So you're racist.
I think I should, like, tell you something.
The school said a teacher who expressed white supremacist views to his students no longer works for the school district as of Monday. He taught at the middle school and was put on administrative leave while the Human Resources Department investigated. The teacher in question is no longer employed here. Well, is he no longer employed or is he on administrative leave? That's two different things, isn't it? I think everyone's racist at that level, he replied. Two of the students told the teacher that they used to respect him. They no longer do. You know, you should have more respect because I'm honest, the unnamed teacher said. The statement from Superintendent Killen said the teacher's conversation does not align with the district's core values or culture, a.k.a. we know that you're not supposed to say this. This guy clearly does not watch the news. We always do our best to ensure the safety of all students. We encourage them to be self-advocates and let an adult know when something is wrong, as they did in this situation. Well, I mean, clearly not every adult is safe to let them know, because what if the next adult was like, oh yeah, I agree with that guy. You never know. It could be any guy. I want to know why that guy would say that. Like, I don't know. It's crazy. Not that I'm saying that you should, like, that if you do think this, you should hide it, obviously. But it's still, like, straight up, you're like, okay, attention all students. My race is the superior one. Moving on. I'm just being honest. Moving on. Would you like to learn some physics? Speaking of things that are racist, I guess. You know, I mean, it's hard to read the news without finding them, right? They garner clicks, and that's what we read. A neighbor recently called police about Bobby Wilson. I haven't read this story at all, by the way. I saw two headlines, and they're loaded up, and we're going to read it and see what it's about. Because maybe it is just a clickbait headline, and it's not actually important. A neighbor recently called the police about Bobby Wilson, 9, who has been slaying spotted lantern flies to save trees on her street. Her mother said during a public comments at the mayor and council meeting on Tuesday, November 1st. Monique Joseph said that her neighbor, Gordon Lashie, called police October 22nd when her daughter went outside alone to spray the insects. Lashie declined to comment on the matter. Okay, so the neighbor declined to comment. The morning of October 22nd, our neighbor called the police, identified himself, and reported that there's a little black woman walking, spraying stuff on the sidewalks and streets. I don't know what the hell she's doing. It scares me, though. Included that she was wearing a hoodie. It is sickening and scary to hear my neighbor use triggering words that have resulted in the deaths of too many black and brown children and adults at the hands of police. Words like black, hooded, and I'm scared. Those are trigger words. That's a quote from the mom. Joseph, who received a recording of the call from the police, commended the responding officer, but said her daughter was afraid to go outside the next day and continues to feel fear 2 weeks after the call was... Oh, okay, well, her daughter's allowed to be scared, but the neighbor's not? That's triggering, right? Based on everything that has transpired, I am concerned and outraged. I want this to be a teachable moment for our town on racial bias, diversity, equity... and inclusion, and how we together can ensure going forward little black and brown children in this town can feel safe in this community. This is a very personal matter for my family. This is not political, and I am not here for a party. Hey, everyone, party at the CAC. I'm not here for a party. I am here for my 9-year-old, my 13-year-old, and myself. Lashie is core chairman and treasurer of the Caldwell Republican Party. Oh, okay. Well... interesting. The news is here for a party, apparently. He and Joseph had lived across the street from each other for almost 8 years. Racism, intentional or not, is racism. Okay, so if you call the police on any person and it happens to be a person who's not white, then it's racist, I guess. But I'm okay with that, I guess. I don't know. Joseph's daughter, Hayden, also spoke about the incident and said her sister, Bobby, joined her at the podium. She was not only doing something amazing for our environment, she was doing something that made her feel like a hero. Killing innocent bugs makes her feel like a hero. Our land... I don't even know what a lantern fly is. Our lantern fly is dangerous. I'm going to look it up. These insects are not dangerous to humans or pets. They don't bite or sting, and they aren't venomous, but they do pose a serious risk to agriculture. Why are lantern flies so dangerous? It's a danger to more than 100 plants and trees. It can kill grapevines and the tree of heaven. The tree of heaven? Whoa. A fast-growing deciduous tree native to China. Oh, okay. It's not truly the tree of heaven. I was like, wow. Lantern flies can kill trees in heaven. So does it make any difference? Like, if you see a lantern fly and you're like, ah, it's killing a tree. Like, if you just kill that one, does that make a measurable difference to the environment? Or did this girl just decide lantern flies are evil and I'm going to kill them? Monique Joseph said that she asked Caldwell police about mediating a dialogue with her and her neighbor at the station. He declined to meet with her. They haven't spoken to each other since. I just wanted to have a conversation with him as a neighbor, as Bobby's mom, and as the woman who lives across the street from him. He needs to understand what he did. Whether he's aware of it or not, he needs to understand the hurt he has caused. Yeah, I mean, I don't say call the police for anything. Like, if you see something going on, don't call the police. That can only go bad. Get your own lantern fly sprayer and take matters into your own. I mean, this girl didn't say, hey, police, there's lantern flies killing the trees. No, she went out there and she handled it. So if you see a problem, wait, hang on. That is actually not what I meant. Please don't handle it. If you see a kid doing something you don't like, don't spray them with ant killer. Everyone is going crazy over Twitter. So Elon Musk basically months ago said, I don't like how Twitter's run. I'm going to buy it. I'm going to buy it for $44 billion. Okay, I'm going to buy Twitter. Yeah, okay, I'll buy it. Twitter says, okay, buy it. Sign right here and buy it. Elon Musk goes, okay, I will. Duh, I'm going to buy it. Here's your stupid paperwork signed. And Twitter said, okay, actually, you bought it, so now you have to buy it. Twitter Musk goes, I was just joking. I'm not buying Twitter. That was just a joke. And Twitter goes, you signed. You have to. So Elon Musk is legally forced to buy Twitter as a joke. Now, I know everyone who loves Elon Musk is like, no, this is all part of the plan. And maybe it was, right? I don't know. Maybe it was all part of the plan. But over the past couple months, or weeks rather, it hasn't even taken months, it's taken weeks, and he fired half of everyone, then he sent an email out to everyone else that said, if you're not willing to work long hours, very hardcore, you quit now. And then he said, anyone who writes code, please send me a screenshot of your best code. And it's gone on and on and on. Whew. Hundreds of Twitter employees are estimated to have decided to quit the beleaguered social media company following a Thursday deadline from new owner Elon Musk that staffers sign up for long hours at high intensity or leave. If I see any job posting that says you need to have flexibility sometimes to work long hours, I go, I am not working there. I don't work at any place that demands more than 10 hours of dedicated work per week. Yeah, I get paid for 40, but I do about 2 hours of work a day. Elon Musk took to Twitter late on Thursday and said he's not worried about resignations as the best people are staying. The billionaire owner also added, we just hit another all-time high in Twitter usage. Let's see if this video has any information.
We may be on the brink of a seismic change in the way we talk to each other. something that would shake the foundations of critical communications on a global scale. Twitter appears to be on the brink.
There this are fresh bow-tied guy this really is being
how
dramatic
long the company
about this.
Can hang on. For years now, Twitter has been the world's conduit for vital information. Tens of millions of people rely on it. So do world leaders and governments, major corporations and small businesses. It's the go-to platform in an emergency. Here's how the latest wave of chaos rolled out over the company. Billionaire owner Elon Musk set a deadline of 5 p.m. Eastern yesterday for all remaining employees to agree to, quote, long hours at high intensity or else quit and take 3 months severance. We know hundreds of workers headed for the doors rather than agree to the new conditions.
Musk met some top employees on Thursday to try to convince them to stay, said one current employee and a recently departed employee who is in touch with Twitter colleagues. The company also notified employees it will close its offices and cut badge access until Monday, according to two sources. This headline in Fox News is pretty funny.
In light of the uncertainty around Twitter and out of an abundance of caution, CBS News is pausing its activity on the social media site as it continues to monitor the platform, Major.
Jonathan Vigliotti.
What does that
Thank
even
you.
Mean? Triggered by Musk. Fox News uses the term triggered. Triggered by Musk, CBS News announced it's suspending all Twitter activity out of an abundance of caution. Fearful of the uncertainty surrounding Elon Musk's management of Twitter, CBS News announced that it would be suspending its usage of the social media site. CBS News is one of the first major entities to flee Twitter in the wake of threats from many Musk critics to leave the platform once the billionaire tech CEO took over the company. What? Abundance of caution? We think there might be Twitter COVID over there, so out of abundance of caution, we're just not going to use it. I don't know what's going on. We're going to see, though, like, maybe everything's going to be fine. Maybe at the end of the day, it's going to be like, okay, Twitter actually only needs, like, 50 people to run it. Because think about it. Why wouldn't it? What feature is there even on Twitter? Okay. Five guys can run the database server. Three guys can run the server that serves, like, the website itself. And 10 guys can write some code. But the code's already written. You don't have to change it. Okay. Oh, we want to change it from 140 characters to 280 characters. That's going to take weeks of work. No. It doesn't take weeks of work. It takes 2 seconds of work. And one of the database guys has to increase the size of that field on the back end. So, yeah, maybe after all this is done, Twitter's going to be fine. But here's the thing. They're not really... I say here's the thing a lot. I think a lot of people say that. They're not going to recover very easily from the PR issue, which is kind of surprising that they're not putting out a PR statement. A lot of companies, when they're in trouble, like going through a big change or whatever, they put out a statement. They go, we understand everyone is very stressed. This is a very big change in our company, but we are dedicated to doing what is best for all customers. And rest assured, your data is safe. The Chinese government cannot access it. Your account is fine. Nobody can parody you. And we're here for you no matter what, day and night. Whatever, blah, blah, blah. Well, that's not happened. Elon Musk just keeps going on Twitter, putting up polls as to who should be allowed back on. Okay, should Donald Trump be allowed back on? Should Alex Jones be allowed back on? Should that guy who ran over a girl in Raleigh be allowed back on? So part of me thinks he's like killing it on purpose. Does he secretly want Trump's Truth Social to be the one place that you can get your misinformation and you can't get it from Twitter anymore? Who knows? Gonna see what happens. All right. We had there's been like a lot happening in Idaho with this thing. I haven't really followed it. So let's figure out what's going on. Apparently there's a killer and he got away. No one knows who it is. In the early morning hours of November 13th, 2022, ooh, that's only 9 days ago. Guys, we're not that far behind the news. a mass murder took place in Moscow. Well, obviously, Idaho. Oh, Moscow, Idaho, United States. 4, University of Idaho students were stabbed to death in an off-campus three-story rented home. The authorities have not identified any suspects. The incident has been marked by a reversal of police statements as to whether the community may be at risk, a lack of apparent progress in solving the crime. And in October 2022, the skinned, stabbed, and mutilated body of a puppy called Buddy was also found near the location of the murders. Okay, so it could be related or not. Two of the four victims, Chapin and Kernodal, were earlier at an on-campus party at the fraternity from 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. on Saturday evening. They returned home at 1:45 a.m. The other two victims, lifelong best friends, Mogan and Goncalves, what? I'm sure I'm not pronouncing that right, had gone together to a downtown sports bar called the Corner Club at 10 p.m. Saturday evening, which they left at 1:30 a.m. A live stream video was found by a nearby food truck that showed Mogan and Goncalves at the truck at 1:41 a.m., chatting and smiling. They got their food 10 minutes later, leaving to take what the police initially said was an Uber ride home, only for the police to rephrase their statement later, say, and the ride was for my private party. Oh, yeah, party at the CAC. Callback. All four victims were in the back of the home were back at home by 1:45 a.m. 7 unanswered phone calls were made from the phone of Goncalves to her former longtime boyfriend, a fellow student, between 2:30 and 2:52. Mogan also called him 3 times from 2:44 until 2:52. Yikes. These calls are still being investigated. The other two surviving roommates returned home by 1 a.m. Wait, but they were not attacked or held hostage. Huh? The other two surviving roommates returned home by 1 a.m., but they were not attacked or held hostage. The four college students were stabbed to death on the second and third floors of the home. The victims were not tied or gagged. The walls at the scene were reportedly splattered with blood. No calls to 911 were made until 11:58 a.m. on Sunday, many hours after the killings. At that time, a call was made from a cell phone of one of the surviving students who lived at the residence from inside the residence about an unconscious person. When the police arrived, the door to the home was open. There was no sign of blah, blah, blah. Wait, though. So what are they saying? Two people who survived were home by 1 a.m.? They were not attacked or held hostage, but magically, 4 people on the upper stories were dead? Let's see if Idaho Statesman has any information.
911 call in University of Idaho killings.
Ooh, it is
came
a robot
from one of roommates' cell phones. 1 week after the fatal stabbings of 4 University of Idaho students, the Moscow Police Department will hold its second press conference Sunday, police said, and law enforcement also released a few new details on Saturday night. Most notably, police cleared another person while investigating the homicides.
Police said that detectives had investigated the rideshare driver who dropped off Mogan and Goncalves just before 2 a.m. and do not believe they were involved. Police also indicated that the victims' bodies were found on the second and third floor of the 6-bedroom home, confirmed the information of the sisters about phone calls after 2 a.m. Police said it's part of an ongoing investigation. This article came out yesterday. Idaho police are expanding the crime scene at site of college students' murders. It's from Fox News.
Detective and Fox News contributor Ted Williams is live on the ground outside the house in Moscow, Idaho. Ted, I've been watching your reporting out there today, and you're really giving us some insight into the lay of the land here and which areas are blocked off and what kind of work they're doing there right now. What can you tell us, Ted?
Well, I can tell you that in the last few minutes, Martha, there's been some developments here where law enforcement is here on the crime scene and they are blocking off the crime scene. They are what they're doing at the crime scene here.
This guy says the word crime scene a lot.
Broadening the crime scene. there's crime scenes taped.
Oh, my God. How many times can he say it?
And what we are now finding is that part of the parking lot itself is being broadened off as part of the crime scene. Now, earlier I had spoken about the area of the crime scene that the leaves and everything back here.
That's a lot of crime scene tape. When I was a kid, I thought that that stuff was sweet. I'm going to get some crime scene tape. I'm going to go play. I'm just going to tape stuff off and say that this is a crime scene. I'm investigating stuff in here. What are you investigating? I'm like, I saw a piece of broken glass. Or maybe I saw a discarded like aluminum can. That is littering and this is a crime scene. I'm a kid. I do crime scene investigations about this littered can. Well then, I just refreshed, like the video just refreshed, so I guess we're never going to know how many more times this guy can say crime scene unless I can refresh it. The video is playing in picture-in-picture
mode.
Homicide
detective and Fox.
If we pan over.
Okay, here we go.
We're looking at the second and third.
So this is the actual house. This is the murder house.
Of this home. And as you look, these are the two sections where the bodies were supposed to have been found.
So the parking lot that they've marked off for the crime scene is kind of even.
It is believed that there were two surviving individuals.
It's kind of even with the, like, the second or third floor of this home. Like, if you were really good at running and jumping, you could run, jump from the parking lot to the second story of the house because it, like, drops off and then the house exists, right? So what are they saying? Like, a really good long jumper was in this parking lot and he jumped. That's why they're marking it off. Let's see if there's any info about the surviving people.
Here, that was on the second floor. Not, I stand to be corrected, on the first floor of his home. Those individuals, 9 hours later, a call was put into law enforcement. Now, it is my understanding that before law enforcement arrived, that those individuals may have called others that came to this scene, meaning the other civilians. The problem with that is there's always a concern of contamination of this scene. So all of these things are going on right now. But as we speak, law enforcement is here cordoning off this area, widening the area.
What?
Yeah.
Okay, well, we've learned absolutely nothing. Obviously, it was one of the two people that's still alive, if not both of them. Right? Why are they not arrested? Oh, okay, so two people died in your house and nobody knows who it was. And you didn't hear anything. And the police were called like 9 hours after it happened and you were just sleeping downstairs. Is that what happened? You were eating cereal all morning, and then you finally were like, I wonder where those guys are. Oh, they're bloody. Really? I haven't done enough research into figuring out why these two people are not, like, in jail, the surviving ones, but there must be a good reason, right? Or are they really the main suspect, but the police aren't saying? They're, like, saying, we have no suspect. Like, we don't really suspect you, but also, like, definitely, what were you doing? I mean, we know it wasn't you. And if it was you, I'm sure it was fully an accident. But, like, did anything happen? Do you know anything? Like, if something did happen, what would have happened? Okay, I don't know. On November 19th and 20th, 2022, a mass shooting occurred at Club Q, a gay nightclub in Colorado Springs, Colorado, United States. 5 people were killed, 25 others were injured, 19 of them by gunfire. The suspect, 22-year-old Anderson Lee Aldrich, was also injured and taken to a local hospital. According to the police chief, the shooting began when a gunman entered Club Q while a dance party was being held. Wearing body armor and wielding an AR-15-style rifle, he immediately began shooting at people while moving further into the building. Many survivors at first mistook the gunfire for being part of the music. That is what always happens. Until they continued and saw the muzzle flash. Club patrons sheltered behind the bar and then in the dressing rooms, while others stayed low to the ground. A club patron, identified as U.S. Army veteran named Richard M. Fierro, tackled him to the ground, causing the gunman's rifle to fall out of reach. He then grabbed a handgun from the attacker's hand and used it to hit him repeatedly in the head. Fierro was arrested by other... assisted by other patrons. That'd be funny. No! Stop hurting the gunman! Fierro was assisted by other patrons, including a man who moved the rifle away to safety and a drag performer who used their high heels to stomp on the gunman, who helped disable and hold the attacker down until the authorities arrived. Oh, no. How embarrassing. The police received an initial call for service regarding the shooting at 11:56 p.m. on November 19th. The first officer began being dispatched a minute later. The first responding officer arrived in the area at midnight, so 4 minutes later, and arrested the suspect 2 minutes later. Wow! That's fast. A total of 39 patrol officers in all four, blah, 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 blah. So, that happened. A shooting and then tackled by an army man and then stopped on by a drag queen. So high heels. That's the end of your shooting that you've planned for months. Or maybe not. I don't know. We'll find out. The suspect is Anderson Lee Aldrich, a 22-year-old resident from Colorado Springs, the grandson of outgoing Republican California State Assembly member Randy Vopel. Okay, hang on. This is the second article we've read where they called out if someone's a Republican or not. Conspiracy? And this guy's not even a Republican. He's just the grandson of another Republican. On June 18th, 2021, this guy, who was then 21, was arrested after his mother reported him to have issued a bomb threat against her. Aldrich did not surrender initially, and in the resulting standoff, neighboring homes had to be evacuated. However, no charges were pursued in the case, which was sealed. There's also no record that the police or relatives attempted to trigger the Colorado red flag law, which would have allowed for the seizure of any weapons and ammo. Can you imagine? You get to be in a standoff and all of your neighbors have to be evacuated because you said a bomb threat, and the police come and you look out your window and they're all there. And then it's like, oh, just kidding. No charges. Fun. All right. We have a few more things to cover. I saw this coming out. Pediatricians call for a national emergency as the flu and RSV surge. What they want is this.
Today, I am officially declaring a national emergency. Two very big words. Today, I am officially declaring a national...
Pediatricians are imploring the federal government to declare a national emergency as cases of pediatric respiratory illness continue to soar. Our system is stretched to its limit, and without immediate attention, the crisis will only worsen. Mark Wichita, the Children's Hospital Association Chief Executive Officer, said in a news release this week that was issued jointly with the American Academy of Pediatrics. At least six hospitals, three of them children's hospitals, have set up overflow tents as influenza and RSV tally record-breaking case counts. Declaring a national emergency would create flexibility for healthcare providers and systems, particularly regarding government-funded programs such as Medicare, Medicaid, and the Children's Health Insurance Program. The organizations are called for an increase in the amount of money government pays, blah, blah, blah. So how is RSV spread? How does RSV spread? Okay, let's Google it. RSV is spread through contact with droplets of the nose and throat of infected people when they cough or sneeze. Okay. RSV can also spread through dried respiratory secretions on bread cloths, blah, blah, blah. How easy is it to spread RSV? RSV is highly contagious. It can be spread through droplets containing the virus when someone coughs or sneezes. Okay, we've heard this before. How come there's not... Are they doing school masking for RSV? Masks for RSV. I'm just going to Google it and see what happens. With COVID... Oh, okay, this is great. From theconversation.com. With COVID, flu, and RSV circulating, it's time to follow the evidence. Return to mask mandates. What? Really? The number of children and babies with respiratory illnesses currently exceeds the capacity of our healthcare system to care for them. Okay, I am not going to read that. That's too depressing. Okay, why mask mandates may be harder to justify in solving the crisis in children's hospitals. Currently, if you want to Google it, people are actually talking about we should mask for RSV. So, like I said, I guess anytime there's a sickness, which is 100% of the time because we live in a simulation that has sicknesses still, they're not deleted from the program yet, that's going to happen. All right, we got to speed through. We got to get going because I got 2 hours of work to do today. A 10-year-old student may face battery charge after hugging a school counselor. I think people have probably heard of this, but I only read about this a couple days ago. A 10-year-old boy was suspended from his Florida elementary school and faces a charge of misdemeanor battery after he was accused of inappropriately touching a school counselor during a hug. This is an allegation that his family denies. The counselor at Holly Hill School in Volusia County alleged that she was visiting a classroom on October 4th to discuss something when the fourth grader approached her for a hug. According to police report and a copy of a suspension letter provided by the boy's family. Oh, wait, sorry. I was reading that like that there was a statement after that, but no. That was saying that this is... Approached her for a hug, according to the police report. I can't find the police report. Maybe I... Hang on. I'm going to try to find it. 10-year-old hugs counselor police report. PDF. I should have looked harder for the police report, because that'd be so funny. She said she turned sideways to give a side hug. Then the child put one arm around her shoulder and with the other hand reached and grabbed her left breast. The counselor said she removed his hand and walked away. Well, they didn't play enough of this for him, I guess. That is an old reference. NBC News generally does not name minors accused of crimes. The NBC News is also not naming the counselor because she invoked Marcy's Law, which in Florida allows alleged crime victims to remain anonymous. She could not be reached Wednesday at a phone number listed for police. Were called to the school in reference to an alleged battery. And now the child... So she walked away. She's like, go back to your class. And then she called the police. Lawyers representing the boy's family said he had been falsely accused. They further said the school never properly investigated the incident and suspended the child for 10 school days, despite his denying the claims. He was allowed to return to school on Tuesday, they said. My grandson has been accused of something and then punished before the facts. We will not stand for it. The 10-year-old's teacher was in the room during the alleged incident but did not witness what happened, according to the police report and the suspension letter. The police report and suspension letter state that the teacher called the fourth grader over to discuss what happened, but he began to yell, and the front office was called to remove him from the classroom? All right. New news came out about this a couple days ago. The family is demanding action from the county after a district mental health counselor pressed charges against the 10-year-old. The family says the boy did not grab the employee's breast during a hug, like she reported at the Holly Hill Police Department. They have hired an attorney to defend the boy, who served a 10-day suspension from school and is still facing simple battery charges. In addition, he declaring the boy's record, the family is demanding the school district fire the employee and discipline others involved. We will not stand by this and allow him to be accused of something he did not do. I would not stand from, even if he did do it, like if you're 10, and are you even, can you even be charged? Like how, if you did something inappropriate, let's say, but you're 10 and you're like, I don't even know what inappropriate is because I've never like touched my own breast, if you know what I mean. How would I know to touch someone else's breast? I'm 10. I just touch things. I'm 10. I can't do sexual assault when, I don't know. You know what I'm saying, right? Whatever. So we're going to see what happens with that. I always say we're going to see what happens with stuff, but then we don't. Final story. There have been two men arrested In threats in New York Jewish community, the police say. The authorities arrested two men on Saturday, this is just this past weekend, at New York's Pennsylvania station and seized a large hunting knife, an illegal firearm with a 30-man magazine, and what they described as a developing threat to the Jewish community. New York Police Department was strategically deploying resources to sensitive locations throughout the city based on the threat. Commissioner did not elaborate on the nature of the threat or provide any more information. Well, luckily, when we report on the news a couple days after it happens, we can get new information. New details released in the synagogue threat.
Spotted at Penn Station by two MTA police officers.
Now, this morning, Mayor Adams, alongside city and federal officials, spoke about how they worked together with local Jewish leaders to stop the potential attack. CBS 2's Zinnia Maldonado joins us live from outside City Hall with new details this noon. Zinnia?
Here she is.
Chris and Mary, this was a combination of both local and federal efforts to catch those two suspects over the weekend, one of which had multiple weapons on him, including a gun. We also learned the tip about the suspects came in from a local Jewish organization, and just a few hours later, an arrest was made by those two MTA police officers.
CBS has learned that the tip came from a local Jewish organizations. And then a few hours later, arrest was made. This is not an idle threat. This is an active threat. Chris Brown from Long Island and Matthew Maurer from Manhattan, 21 and 22, were both arrested Saturday for allegedly making threats to attack a New York City synagogue. We were up on 34th and 7th when we saw him walk in with his friend, stopped him, made the arrest. Okay, I want to figure out how they figured this out. Does the video say?
This was not an idle threat.
Okay, we just know that.
This was a real threat.
21-year-old Christopher Brown from Long Island and 22-year-old Matthew Mayer from Manhattan were both arrested Saturday for allegedly making threats to attack an unidentified New York City synagogue.
We were up at 34th and 7th, 34th Street and 7th Avenue, when we saw...
Skipping ahead, because we already read this part.
...actually walk in with his friend.
Mayor Adams applauding the work of the NYPD, the FBI, the MTA, and local Jewish organizations in preventing the attack.
Skipping
pointing
ahead.
Out with the city being home to
the members of the public for the...
Does it stop playing when I click off the tab?
Information already shared in this case. If anyone else has information regarding these individuals or any threat to the Jewish community... I would ask that you reach out to the FBI or NYPD as soon as possible.
Governor Hochul says state police will be available to provide extra security to synagogues throughout the city. Eric Goldstein, CEO of the United Jewish Association, says anti-Semitism...
I bet you he was going to say anti-Semitism is awesome and we really condone it. We wish more people would do it. Just please don't kill us. I bet you that's what he was about to say when I cut that video off. Sorry for cutting that off, so we'll never know what he was going to say. Police sources said the threats were made to target unspecified synagogues in New York City on a computer. What? This makes no sense. Yesterday morning, they detected an individual on Twitter who was talking about carrying out violent attacks against the Jewish synagogue, nonspecific in New York. Talking about carrying out violent attacks against the Jewish synagogue, nonspecific in New York. We also got a threat from a few other organizations as well. We also got the threat from... It's a horrifying development to think that this individual who was armed and could have done incredible damage was walking the streets. Thankfully, law enforcement stepped in quickly and was able to apprehend them before anyone was hurt. I'm sure everyone that knows the story... They're so vague. What? Was he just reading someone's Twitter messages? I don't understand what's happening. They said they're going to do an attack, but they didn't say where they're going to do an attack. They just said they don't like Jews and they're going to do an attack. So then they arrested the guys and they happened to have guns and stuff on them. This is so weird. I bring you no information for this show. We just read the news and go, what? Is this true? It never's true. If you're ever in the news, you'll know how untrue the news is. Because then you read the news and you go, wait, that's not what happened at all. But then you go to work And then everyone goes, wow, we saw you in the news. Did you really get raided? For, you know, you got servers full of child porn. That wasn't me. That was like that. Remember when I was at the child porn raid? And then all the servers are being carried out. And then so everyone who read the news would think, oh, my goodness, there were servers and servers of that stuff. Anyway, that was someone else. That wasn't me. I was just there. This has been News with Nick. Head on over to newswithnick.com if you want to rewatch this exact show, but video versioned, unedited. Got to get to work. See you in, I don't know. I probably forgot to say something. So see you in a couple hours when I remember what I was going to say. And then I post it as a whole separate show. Got to get my money's worth for that website.
Into the lay of the land here, and which areas are
I'm
going to
count how many times this guy says crime
scene. There right now. What can you tell us, Ted?
Well, I can tell you that in the last few minutes, Martha, there's been some developments here where law enforcement is here on the crime scene, and they are blocking off the crime scene. They are what they're doing at the crime scene here is Three. That they are broadening. The crime scene. There's crime scenes taped up around the home. And what we are now finding is that part of the parking lot itself is being broadened off as part of the crime scene.
Six.
Now, earlier I had spoken about the area of the crime scene.
Seven.
That the leaves and everything back here were rather undisturbed. And I spoke about the fact that the killer or killers very well could have come out of what we have as a rear door back here. We don't really know that they did, but if they did, and if they wanted to get rid of their weapon, the knife that was used to kill these four young people,
I think we're gonna get
they
seven.
Could have dumped that knife anywhere back here. So I would have to believe at some stage or another, law enforcement is going to perform a grid search of this area just to clear it. I'm not saying that the murder weapon is back here, but primarily to make a determination if there is any physical evidence
this
back here.
This guy's the killer.
Martha, this was
he knew what, he knew
a very
what happened.
Gruesome murder scene, according to the medical examiner. According to the medical examiner, there was actually blood on the walls. And I can tell you, if we pan over, we're looking at the second and third story of this home.